RCR with Paul Brennan.
Professor Rob McCulloch holds the Matthew S. Abel Chair of Macroeconomics at Auckland University. He's previously worked at the Reserve Bank, Oxford University and the London School of Economics. He's been a regular guest on RCR through 23-24, and he's back with us in 2025. Hi, Rob. Nice to catch up with you again.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
We're here to talk about the government's Active Investor Plus AIP visa, which they say is aimed at drawing wealthy investors and remote workers to New Zealand. What's Rob McCulloch's off-the-top-of-the-head reaction to that?
Well, my off-the-cuff reaction, well, it's not off-the-cuff. I looked very closely at the visa, by the way, and I also listened to the entire press conference that Chris Luxon gave over it, about it, and my view is that it's a con. It's a con job. And my view is that, you know, Labour were dreadful. They got voted out. The country looked to Luxon to provide some leadership. And it's time he gave up the kind of Ardern, Hipkins-style comms, PR, marketing presentations and wheeling out policies, which he markets as all about economic growth and are not about economic growth at all. They're just shallow, empty nothingsness. So why is that? He misled us all in his conference. He was arguing we need sort of skills and direct investments to sort of build up science and technology in the country. This visa has nothing to do with that. You are not required to make a direct investment and bring skills and talent and know-how to Kiwi companies. You are completely able to simply invest in a managed fund and qualify for this visa. You don't have to speak the language, and you can just flick some money into one of the big banks' managed funds, and you're on the road to a Kiwi passport. What's the point of that? You're selling the passport like some shonky banana republic, and you're inviting in people who may just drain education, infrastructure, healthcare. They don't have to contribute any skills. They're not going to grow the economy. All they need to is flick some funds into one of the big banks' managed funds. Why? Because my impression is, and I'll make an accusation, the Prime Minister's got into bed with the big banks, and there he is. He's done a backroom deal with them. The big banks have want to sell, get more commissions from their funds, and throwing in a pathway to a Kiwi passport is a good way to do that. So I am making an accusation on Luxon. When did you speak to the banks? When did you speak to the big funds and decide to throw in a passport so they could flick a few more bucks their way? I think it's a disgrace.
I don't have an economic head on me, but I think I have a common sense head. It sounds like desperation. It seems also Luxon has a history of being a genius businessman running one of New Zealand's biggest companies, so he should know about the ins and outs and mechanics of business and how to make money. So this is what, desperation when your back is to the wall economically? Is our back against the wall?
Well, the country's been going nowhere for several years now. We're one of the worst performing economies in terms of GDP growth in the entire world. We're coming in at like 181st out of 190 countries in terms of how fast the economy's growing. And, you know, they got a problem. The Nats have got a problem because the economy started doing badly under Labor. But now the official stats have put 2024 as a recession year, the last half of the year. And they've now got the headline that not only was it recession, but the worst since 1991. So my impression is the Nats have no plan, and they're crossing their fingers, simply hoping that, my God, when interest rates come down, and let's try to get them down more. They engineered a recession, but let's put pressure on the Reserve Bank to now engineer a boom, get people buying real estate again, And let's just hope that that boom has taken off, another short-term sort of boom leading to another bust by the time of the election in 2026. So, you know, it's just exposing that the Nats never had a plan, and it's exposing Nicola Willis, who is probably the second worst ever finance minister after Grant Robertson.
Wow, two in a row.
Two in a row. That actually, you're right. That's what stuffed the country. Two disastrous finance ministers in a row.
If you are trying to fill that role, you'd want the smartest thinker, well, on the planet, in the country, wouldn't you? Because everything comes from that. So how do we explain this? What would you call it, mediocrity there?
Well, I'm going to make another accusation. I'm going to accuse the National Party of corruption, because many of us have had a gutsful of their appointments. They have not appointed the best people for the job. The party, we all hoped, we wished that the coalition would symbolise meritocracy. We've had enough of these other agendas. We need good people running the country. And yet they have, I've counted around 30 appointments the Nats have made, which are all their mates. Their mates from John Key years, their former National Party MPs, retired folks. It seems that Luxon doesn't have a clue who the best people are. He's rung up his mate, John Key. He said, John, who, you know, I don't know who to do a science review. Well, you know, Key said, well, my chief finance advisor was Sir Peter Gluckman. You know, my dad, we've known the family for 100 years. Having Sir Peter Gluckman, recycling him back, a throwback from John Key's government, there's a galaxy of people who could have done that job better than Peter Gluckman. And what do? You just get back. Judith actually got back Peter Gluckman back from the Key years because they knew the guy. Well, you know, why aren't they making way for a new group? Same with Lester Levy. Bring back the Key guy and put him in to run Health New Zealand. Bring back Bill English and get him to review housing. Bring back Simon Bridges on infrastructure. Bring back all the people. There's just, I've got 20 to 30 names. The Secretary of the Treasury, they never have asked any of the economists in the country. In Auckland, we have now a guy, Peter Phillips, for a couple of decades ranked the number one economist in the world. He's retired back to New Zealand from Yale. Don't ask Peter about, you know, as you said, who's the best person we could get to run the New Zealand Treasury. Just get some throwback civil servant who's been hanging around Wellington for decades, who Nicola Willis knows. This is a disgrace. The National Party have just got their mates back from the Key years. They're not getting young, talented Kiwis. They're not searching the world for the best person. And yeah, I mean, maybe Luxon can defend this and go on to the radio show saying, why the heck did you just get 30 of your mates? Why did you ring up John and ask him what he thought about this appointments? Because we all know that that's what you've done. New Zealand's a small country. I know all the people he talks to. They gossip. I get feedback. I have my back channels. We know what you're doing, Chris. And you should just give this up because it's sending the country nowhere.
In light of revelations in the last week or so from the United States coming out of USAID, but it looks like it's spreading. And there seems to be a pattern. And that is fleecing the Treasury, ultimately. You talked about those relationships here in a small country, and I get that. We are a small country. Makes it more difficult. But do you think it's time now that well, the media, we try and do it, but the mainstream media, maybe they will never do it, to start examining these relationships and how they sort of intertwine over the years and decades that you were just referring to there, so we can make more of an informed, intelligent assessment on whether we think or read into the motives of those choices and you know, add that to the information base that helps us as voters and citizens make decisions and form opinions. Is it time to be really hard on that now, do you think?
You're quite right, Paul. And it's amazing that the big mainstream media folks, that should be their main job, shouldn't it? Rather than just going off on some ideological rant. You know, we have today TVNZ saying the health system's systemically racist, And, you know, just, you know, John Campbell or whatever, look, just why don't you do your job and hold public officials?
And where are they getting
account?
the money from, Rob? That's what we've got to start asking. Who's benefiting from a particular bias or approach?
You're quite right. It's a very profound point, because some of my colleagues have been asking the Monetary Policy Committee of the Reserve Bank that sets interest rates. In many countries, each of those members is scrutinized. You know, what are their political allegiances? Are they more left? Are they more right? What have they said in the past? Here, no one even knows who they are. They've gone under virtually no scrutiny at all. Why did Gluckman get that job? Why did Lester Levy get that job? Why can't they do exposés, their relationships? And you know what? It's not just the public sector. It's the private sector. New Zealand is falling in the corruption ratings. We were number one in the world for having the least. Now Bryce Edwards was tracking it. Now we've fallen to fourth, but the trend is now down. In the private sector, forget the public service here. It's an inbred club. It's these many of them, total, absolute no-hopers who are mixing in particular circles, going round. It's the same old suspects getting jobs on boards, running New Zealand. They all know each other. It's a club. Why doesn't the media focus in on how did these people get onto the boards? How did they become chairs of the boards? Who did they know? Because you're seeing it not just in the public sector, but in the private sector. We have a profound crisis of leadership in the country. It's become inbred.
Yeah, according to that report that you just mentioned, our ranking slipped to the fourth in Transparency International's Corruption Perception Index. Key issues: lack of transparency and lobbying, a revolving door. I mean, this is like repeating what you've heard from, you know, other countries, a revolving door between government and lobbyists, and the frequent use of urgency in parliament, I guess, to ram things through while people are kind of off to bed, among other issues. I mean, it's standard stuff, isn't it?
Well, it's not a right or left thing. So I'm not going to do a partisan thing where I attack one side or the other. Because look at the appointments. Why did the finance minister, she brings back Graham Scott to run her social investment agency. The guy's been retired for donkey years. I met him when I was 18 years old. He was Secretary of the Treasury when I applied there. You know, why are you getting Wellington insiders why aren't you getting a young person, right? You just bring back Graham Scott, for God's sakes, because you've known him for decades and donkey's years. What's going on? Then you have Grant Robertson. I'm retiring from politics. I'll just be, hey, what about Vice Chancellor of Otago University on $700,000 a year? What is this revolving door in what's happened to our country, National and Labour? You just go through, you go from being in politics to then a job. It's all done around these kinds of networks. You know, what's gone wrong with the country?
Couple of more quick questions. House prices in particularly Wellington, I know that because I have a house in Wellington, have crashed pretty well. 26% seems like a crash to me. And in other parts of the country, a similar experience. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that that is psychologically damaging to the average person, because their measure of success and wealth is tied up in their house, and they weren't sold that as an outcome. And I'm wondering what happens economically when you get, you know, a slightly depressed feeling that could come from that and the general circumstances. What does that do to an economy?
Well, I think the one-line answer to what you said is it does have an effect. There's something they study in economics called the wealth effect. And when the value of your house changes, when it goes up or down, now dropping, you're obviously, you're even if you're not selling your house, you feel a lot less wealthy. And that can explain why people's spending is quite weak. People are sort of thinking, gosh, you know, I'm not as wealthy as I thought I was. I think during the height of the pandemic, our out of control, incompetent Reserve Bank, which printed sort of $50-60 billion of cash, slashed interest rates close to zero, that created the bubble in around 2021. You know, that's the time when a lot of people bought real estate that now has fallen greatly in value. I think the average property price in New Zealand hit $1 million during those years. And I think now Wellington has gone from around $1 million to more like 800,000. Well, heck, you feel a lot less wealthy. And that can impact spending and keep us in recession for longer. So yes, it undoubtedly is having an impact.
And meantime, the interest rates are up, so you're paying more on that mortgage than when you signed up for it, though I guess you're stress tested. And rates are going through the roof. There seems to be off you go, spend as much as you like if you're a local body or government. And some of the schemes are questionable and outside what many think are the roles of local government. I mean, it just seems to be happening everywhere, Rob. Is this incompetence generally?
Well, let's get stuck into misinformation being sold by the Prime Minister, because we've just had enough of it. And if he thinks he can get away with his Liquid Luxe kind of Unilever sales job, I'm selling soap or dishing powder, but actually it's not a very good product, but I'm just going to do a big sales job. The buck has stopped where he can't just get away with misleading 5 million people. So how's he misled people? He's saying National's dealt with the cost of living crisis. They haven't dealt with it at all. I mean, what's he talking about? Now, he says, I've dealt with it by giving people tax relief. Well, by the way, putting more money in your pocket, Paul, doesn't change the cost of anything. You know, you have a bit more money, but it doesn't charge,
Well,
it
it's
hasn't
not much
changed.
more money, is it? I mean, it's been
A
real
tiny bit more money,
tens
but
of
hang on a
dollars,
second.
maybe.
Has it changed the cost of groceries? Has it changed the cost of your rates? Has it changed bank fees? Has it changed Air New Zealand, you know, the cost of its domestic flights?
$800 one way, Queenstown, Auckland at the moment.
But it hasn't changed the cost of anything. It's like you give your children, you know, some pocket money. It doesn't change the cost of anything. Everything still costs the same. So actually, as tax relief, he's given a bit more money in people's pockets, but it hasn't changed the cost of anything. We still have rampant monopoly and oligopoly power. Luxon is secretly in bed with the banks. He's in bed with big business. He's giving speeches, you know, trying to pretend he's bashing the banks. I don't believe a word of it. He also has done a sales con job saying that bringing down inflation has helped the cost of living. That's not the cost of living. Inflation is when the price of everything is going up by the same amount, wages, prices in shops, all those things are going up, and that's called inflation. That's not the cost of living. So the cost of living is for your wage, how affordable are the bundle of goods that you know you buy day to day. And Kiwis are finding they're going backwards, that their wage is buying less. Deliberately confused inflation with the cost of living, with a tax cut with the cost of living. Cost of living comes from not having competitive markets, from having a lot of monopoly and oligopoly power, and he's secretly in bed with those people, and he should just admit it.
And I guess we'll all be waiting to see what job he gets after this one, leaving politics, because that goes back to what I was saying before about
Well,
relationships.
ambassador to London, ambassador to Washington, or you know, he can do what his mate John Key did and just become chair of ANZ Bank or, you know, the revolving door in New Zealand. You know, good on them.
Just a quick question on unemployment. I think we're close to 5%, and the youth unemployment is close to 25%. You know what they say about idle hands, and we do seem to have a growing problem with particularly violent crime, gun crime. Can you see unemployment, because it's a productivity issue in the end, isn't it? That's what we're told all the time. Is unemployment on the way up all the way through 2025, do you think?
Well, yes, the forecasts are that it's going to go higher, I think, to around 5.5%. So it's still trending upwards. And yes, it's concentrated amongst young Kiwis. So no wonder young Kiwis, so many are leaving the country. You know, 25% are, you know, youth unemployment. And, you know, what's partly to blame for this, you know, let's go back to the theme of this interview. What's partly to blame? dozens and dozens of John Key and Chris Luxon's mates and throwbacks get put onto boards. Paula Bennett, chair of Pharmac, for God's sakes. Simon Bridges is in there. Bill English is in there. Murray McCulley's in there. I've just got a list as long as my arm of all these key throwbacks. They piled into all the top jobs in the country. The Secretary of the goddamn Treasury is there. The whole lot of them. Why should young people want to stay in the country? The top jobs are going to this group, an older generation who have good contacts, their networks. That's who the top jobs in this
country
are.
And they're wealthy, right, Rob? They're wealthy. They don't.
And many of them pretty wealthy. Why can't they go? Why can't they go to someone who's in their 20s, let alone their 30s? You know what? You want the hardest working and smartest person in the room. Whether they're 19 years old, 25 years old, or 35, but just going through the Rolodex list of phone numbers that, you know, now replaced by the list on your mobile phone, your little contacts of John Key, Nicola Willis, Chris Luxon, just get over this. Can't you put into place a new generation of Kiwis? And you know what? They've given up. The opportunity's not there, and they're all bailing out.
Final question, because a lot of people have been opining on this. There are calls, well, people saying that it's time over for Luxon, but it's difficult to see any kind of enthusiastic replacement. People might get sort of a buzz from. So this, with the latest polls showing that Labour or the left bloc might have a chance again, we're sort of teeter-tottering, aren't we?
Well, it's difficult because the mainstream media are so biased, and I'm not part of that scene. And what's awkward is Labour was so useless. They put the country in such an awful state. We all know the conversation that, well, Luxon's been a big disappointment. But the other lot, what are they going to do? They're going to come in with no plans other than to put in a wealth and capital gains tax. So people aren't thrilled at the prospect, quite rightly. Of Hipkins. Hipkins is the guy who incarcerated me and virtually a million others in Auckland, basically ruined the lives of, and he's ruined the life of a whole generation of young Kiwis who spent years under lockdown when they were doing all their exams in Auckland. Chris Hipkins essentially buggered the lives of a generation of young Kiwis. And now the guy's the audacity to say, I'd like to be prime minister in 18 months. So that prospect is so unappealing that even though Luxon is, you know, we're not that keen on him, we're between a rock and a hard place.
Rob McCulloch, great to have you back. Let's see how things go. And I'm sure we'll have plenty of convos through this year.
Okay, Paul. Good luck. I'll try to be more optimistic next time.
It's all right.